Call the meeting to order, City of University Heights. Today is June 9, 2026. Welcome, everyone. We have four council present. Lisa, Doug, McKenzie, and Nick are here, and Tim is absent tonight. We have a quorum. Okay, approval of minutes for May 12th and May 19th. Are there any additions or corrections to either minutes? Hearing none, the minutes are approved by unanimous consent. Okay, first order of business is a public hearing. Call the public hearing to order on proposed changes to the zoning ordinance. Anybody from the public want to speak about the proposed changes to the zoning ordinance? This is a specific subject that we're talking about here. Mike, did you get any correspondence?
I did not.
Okay, is anybody on Zoom?
No.
Okay, I don't see anybody wanting to speak to this. Close the public hearing at 7:01. And I'll open the regular meeting. And first of all, is public input. And we have some members of the public who may want to speak to the council, unless they're just visiting. And this is our podium here. And you can speak for 5 minutes. Did you ladies want to speak tonight?
I guess I thought you were asked here because you guys wanted to talk to us. So I don't know where you expect.
Okay, you're going to listen to the meeting, and if you need to speak at some point, I'll let you, okay?
That'd be great, yeah.
When we get to that. Anybody else like to speak at the meeting tonight? Okay, very good. Okay, we'll go on to administration. And first of all, I want to say, you know, in Steve's report, Steve Ballard, the legal guru, said that we need a special meeting for June 30th for some more resolutions for approval. And so I talked to texted members of the council, and everyone can come that night. So I just wanted to announce it to the public too. And then tonight we have our fire chiefs, Chief Scott Lyon from Iowa City. He's here tonight to give an annual report. Chief, you want to come up to the podium?
Absolutely.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. It's nice to be with you tonight. Here to give you the annual report of the Iowa City Fire Department operations in University Heights for 2025. It also speak to something that's on your agenda tonight, which is a renewal of the agreement that we provide fire protection in the city of University Heights. So we'll take the last one first. The Iowa City Fire Department's proud to provide services to the residents at University Heights. We have our fire station right down the road. It only makes sense. You know, we'd hate to drive through a town to get to another part of our city. So from my perspective, it's been going well, and we're real happy with the way things have gone. In 2025, we had a total of 161 unique incidents in the city of University Heights. That resulted in 181 total unit responses. So some calls, you'll have more than one fire truck go. It could be up to five fire trucks, three fire trucks, and a variety of amounts in the middle there, depending on what the incident was. To break those down, 95 of those incidents were medical ones, medical calls for service, which for us at the Iowa City Fire Department, that's about on par of the overall average of what we do. Roughly just over 50% of the calls that we answer for service are medical calls in the city. Another 43 calls were in a bucket called not an emergency. It could be a variety of things. It could be a smoke detector battery change. Somebody thought they saw something, and after all, they didn't. So we went back at service. Those types of calls. 13 calls were for alarms that were sounding at commercial occupancies. Two fire calls that were legitimate fire calls, meaning that something was on fire that required some type of extinguishing operation. That could be anything from a garbage can on fire to a house fire. And then we had 8 hazmat calls or other calls, which kind of fit in a bucket that really doesn't, we don't capture other incidents into. Hazmat calls in the city of University Heights are typically pretty low-key, low-level fluid cleanups after car crashes, that type of thing. So the overall, the Iowa City Fire Department responded to right around 10,000 calls for service last year. So we can certainly absorb the calls for University Heights. And I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone may have about the Iowa City Fire Department.
Are you seeing any uptick in expenses in the station?
Yeah, everything's expensive right now. Had a meeting with our city manager's office this morning, and we have some exciting things coming up in our CIP for this year, including some significant funds to designing a new fire station or replacement fire station. We're taking delivery of 3 new fire engines here, hopefully in the next 3 weeks, and the costs are just simply soaring. So hopefully there's a break in there somewhere, but I'm thinking there's tons.
Chief, do you still drive around, have your trucks drive around some and check out which streets are where? Because we've had an issue with that years ago.
Yes. So
using an old map.
Yeah, we're digital these days, and for station 2, your closest fire station, clearly that expectation is to know exactly where you're going before you go anywhere. So district familiarization is key to our success.
And you work with our police when you go on a call for us?
Yep, we do.
Just like you do with Iowa City?
Just like Iowa City. You know, it's a pretty seamless operation.
And the other thing is, my brother's in insurance, and he says we have a very high rating insurance service in the city of Iowa City, and which includes you taking care of us, and that keeps our insurance rates lower?
It does. So the ISO, Insurance Services, the organization is what it stands for, has a rating scale from 1 to 10, 1 being the it's kind of like golf, the lower the score, the better, being the best score you can get, 10 being not so good. We are a class 2 fire department currently. That step to a class 1 organization is tough. It's not unobtainable, but it's definitely a difficult thing to do. I personally think we can get there at some point, but it just takes a lot of investment. So yeah, the lower the score, the better. And 2 is pretty darn good.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
It helps us a lot. Thank you. Any other questions for Chief?
And say thanks for your services. Your staff has been really great whenever they've been around.
Sure.
I've been around with them.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm very, very, very proud to be their fire chief. And we got a great fire department. They do wonderful, wonderful work for us. So a little bit of trivia for you.
Oh,
what is the busiest day of the week for the Iowa City Fire Department?
4th of July.
Just Monday through Friday. Monday through Sunday.
Friday.
Friday is the busiest. Which it would be the slowest?
Sunday.
And what do you think the gap is between there and percentage?
60.
So the Iowa City Fire Department experiences continual call activity throughout the week. So when I moved here, I thought, oh, you know, it's going to be worse on Thursday nights. It's going to, you know, whatever the case may be, it's just plain busy. It's but it's good.
Wow.
Anything else I can answer for anybody or any other useless trivia?
How are you in the water barrel fights?
We don't do that. Yeah, back in the day, many, many years ago, we used to do that where I came from. I've been in Iowa City for 4 years, and we're not you know, from no. we would get beat by everybody else, so we don't want to show up.
Well, thank you for bringing the agreement, the 28E agreement.
Absolutely.
Working it with the city of Iowa City, and Steve has consideration of resolution number 2625. You want to talk? Steve, you want to mention that a little bit? It's in your report, but yeah, just for the audience.
Yep. So this agreement was entered into with the city of Iowa City originally in 2016. It was a 5-year agreement. We renewed it in 2021 through the end of this month, fiscal year 2026. The proposed renewal that is attached to resolution 2625 would then extend the 2018 agreement for an additional 5 years through June 30 of 2031. Same terms.
So consideration of resolution 2625 is before the council. Is there a motion?
So
motion by Nick. Is there a second? Second by Lisa. Discussion. Roll call vote.
Dwyer?
Aye.
Herbold?
Aye.
Moore?
Aye.
Schroeder absent. Swales?
Aye.
Motion carries 401.
Thank you very much, Chief.
Thank you. We're proud of your service. Thanks. Have a great evening, everybody.
Yeah, good. Okay, we'll go on. From there, we'll go on to the legal report, which you're making up for last month, Steve.
Yeah.
This legal report, and you wrote it out here, but I'm sure some of the public want to hear some of this legal report, too.
You bet. Well, I think the first thing I was going down the list of the legal report items, and I tried to put them in the same order as the agenda. Twice a year, in December and then at the end of the calendar year and at the end of the fiscal year in June, Steve Kuhl makes recommendations for the transfer of funds from hotel motel tax to some debt service. From the general fund, which has local option sales service tax, and sometimes from the OUP TIF fund. So I don't know how much you pay attention to the news, but you know, there's a fellow named Rob Sand who's running for governor. He is the state auditor, and we've had auditors of the city. And I used to work in a bank, and whenever the auditors would come in the door, you know, to get a cup of coffee, everybody would freak out. The auditors just kind of, they have their way. And oftentimes, auditors, public audits or otherwise, but you hear about public audits, and they oftentimes talk about the unauthorized allocation of funds or the unauthorized distribution of funds or things of that nature. And lots of times those findings get headlines, and I'm not here to say that they shouldn't, but I will say that quite often with those misallocations, it sort of reads or it makes you think, oh, somebody's got their hand in the cookie jar. And sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't. It's just that the I's aren't dotted and the T's aren't crossed. And for those of you who have participated in the city's audit with Kronwagi and Olson, thank you. You know, they come in and they want to know, okay, it says here in this resolution, and where's the signed version, and show me where that happened. It's their job to get it right. I'm telling you that, you know, using Mr. Sand's name as an example, and closer to home, you know, if you've been paying attention to some of the school board stuff, which is a little bit different deal, but having funds where they're supposed to be and using those funds for their intended purpose, you know, sometimes are two different things. So what Steve Kuhl does just a tremendous job of doing for the city is dotting all those I's and crossing all those T's. And I don't mean to make it sound like he's on his own. John Brown is very much involved. Nick, I think, is very much involved. But what Steve does is he says, okay, it's time to make a bond payment for a street project that we did some years ago or whatever. And, you know, what we're doing now, we just went undertook a borrowing. Well, you know, when those bonds are sold, and then schedules are made and payments have to be made. But it's not only a question of is there enough in the checking account to make the payment and somebody needs to be reminded and remember to write a check. Those things are important. But it's also that the source of those funds, the city doesn't operate, I won't say like your household, I'll say like my household. We got the one account and that's how it works. We have a couple others, but anyway, the city has a bunch of different accounts, and tax money from Hotel Motel has to go here, and then it can only be used for certain purposes. And so Steve does just a tremendous, tremendous job of keeping the city from having fund lineals and say, hold on, it's not that anybody wasn't, you know, had their hand in the cookie jar, but you still didn't account for this right there. Those of you who have been on the council or been coming to council meetings for some amount of time, I think would agree, and Mike would be able to tell you better than me even, but because I don't go through the audit. I get a call once in a while, but I don't sit here and go through everything with them. But I am here when they give their report to the council, and you're all here as well. And they tell us that we should maybe have more than just one person being the treasurer, and we get that every year. So things like that, but there's never a problem with the way that our funds are held or deposited, how they're accounted for, and what they're used for. And that's all the result of the effort of and I won't leave anybody out, but Nick and John and Steve Kuhl. I'm sorry for the speech. It's Resolution 2631 just ratifies what Steve recommends based upon receipts from these different sources and where they are legally either obligated to be paid or allowed to be paid. And that's what this is. Nothing here changes any budgeting that the city council that you have already adopted. Initial budgets, amended budgets, it's not additional expenditure in any respect, but it is the proper accounting for an allocation of these various funds for 2639.
Thank you for that explanation. So before the council is consideration of resolution number 2531, as Steve said, approving transfer totally $298,571.50 from special assessments and special revenue, hotel motel tax, and debt service for debt payments not financed by the debt service levy. Is there a motion?
Mm-hmm.
Motion by Lisa. Is there a second? Second by McKenzie. Discussion. Roll call vote.
Herbold.
Aye.
Moore.
Aye.
Schroeder absent. Swales.
Aye.
Dwyer.
Aye.
Motion carries 401.
Thank you. So we'll go to first consideration of Ordinance 260.
But so this is an ordinance that maybe I should say a few things, and I, Ryan, if you want to start, that's great. If you want me to, I'm happy to. Troy, anybody, in terms of overview, I tried to give an overview. I don't want to cut you off after inviting you to speak.
I mean, I wasn't really prepared to say much here, but Steve is proposing an ordinance change, or has written up an amendment to the ordinance, the zoning ordinance, which is similar to what we did. We did an ordinance amendment last summer for 1007, 1009 Melrose in association with the Bobby Smith Service Project, because we knew we wanted to remove the driveway accesses off of Melrose Avenue and provide them an access off of Olive Court. We had worked with them and they were comfortable with that agreement for the layout, right? The property's run by the same property owner. And it just so happened they were kind of wanting to do that similar thing anyways, right? To pave that access to the back of 1007. In this instance, we've got a property at 10 Cozier Avenue, which has also got an access off of Melrose Avenue, and the property owners are here tonight as well. But the idea would be also to remove that access off of Bellows Avenue. So when we are relocating the intersection and having the bike lanes out of there, but there's not so many accesses, driveway accesses, as close to that intersection with Crozier and Golfview as there are today. And so the proposal was we provide a secondary driveway off of Cody Rapp, right, off that side street. And so the property owners have sent us a draft layout plan. And then the complication is that their property has apparently three front yards, according to Terry Gerr. So there's no allowance for installing. And they also would like to install a garage, a detached garage to go along with that driveway. In coordination with that relocation work. So there's three front yards. You're not allowed to install a garage within the front yard like setback. There's all these other restrictions as far as the paving area and within like how much physical impervious area can be within the front yard and those items. And so similar to 1007-1009 Melrose, these ordinance changes are meant to sort of just peel back that those restrictions that apply that would need that to, I guess, prevent that project from occurring at 10 permanently. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The way I would, thanks, I appreciate that. The way I would describe it or add to that, so in my mind, at least, largely speaking, the Melrose Complete Streets project involves the city working with property owners in three large respects, in some places the city is saying to property owners, we want to buy some of your land. It's easy for me to say because I'm just buying my land. I don't have a lot of, but anyway, but it's not huge chunks, but it's significant different amounts in different places. So there's some property acquisition. And the city, of course, has what the law calls the right of eminent domain, or the power of eminent domain. So the city can say, well, as long as we're taking this for a public purpose, we're going to take it, and then but the city's required to pay just compensation. And that's the law. So there's property acquisition. And then there are easements. So an easement is somebody owns this piece of property and you could buy it. Well, if somebody owns this piece of property, you might say, well, I don't want to buy it, but I want to have the right to use this 10-foot strip because I want to lay, natural gas piping or electric or sometimes access. I'm a little crosser. So an easement is a property. It's a right in property. So we're buying some property, and then another time we're buying easements. And within the easement category, there's two parts, which adds up to three: buying property, we're getting some temporary construction easements. So a temporary construction easement allows the city, and more particularly the city's contractors, to come upon somebody's property, without a temporary construction easement, the contractor can't put a skid loader or a bulldozer or his cable laying machine or whatever. You can't just go on someone's property. So we're buying what are called temporary construction easements, and then we're also buying some permanent easements. I think there's a couple that are kind of right-of-way access easements, but more commonly they are utility easements. And so that relates to the location or relocation of Mid-American, gas and electric, and then communication from IMON to Mediacom, whatever US West is called these days, different things like that. So buying property, buying a temporary construction easement, buying a permanent easement, all of those, one or more of those activities is part of every one of these various properties, relationship, negotiation with the city. In most of those cases, really in all but three, four, It's a matter of talking to the property owner, showing them the plat. This is what we were asking to either buy or for construction easement or for a permanent utility easement for, sometimes a combination of those things. Back in 2025, pursuant to Iowa law, the city engaged the services of an appraiser who looked at what the city proposed to do and then came out, looked at every one of the properties and looked at things like parking cars and if that was going to be interrupted or reproduced or things that wasn't doing anything, but looked at things to give the city an estimate of value to say, this is what we think you are acquiring from this property owner in terms of dollars. This is just compensation to use the legal phrase. And so the city has these appraisals. And then the city had a different appraisal company perform what are called review appraisals, where different appraiser says, okay, I'm not going out and doing everything involved in an appraisal, but I'm going to review the work of the person who did that. And I'm not an appraiser. I've talked to quite a few, been around. That review process, it's not just, throwing it in. It's a formal, there's professional and ethical standards. They have to really review things. So we've had the appraisals and we've had them reviewed. And that comes up with what the city considers to be just compensation for the taking. So in many of these circumstances, with a lot of our properties, it's really a matter of showing the property owner what is proposed, explaining the project, talking about the appraisal, sharing the appraisal, and then asking if the property owner is agreeable. And I think almost all of those cases, and we hope eventually all of those cases, the property owner has said, sure. I mean, tell me a little bit more, ask some questions and so forth. And Troy's been on point as much as anyone with those negotiations, and it's gone really well. There are some particular properties where it's a little more complicated. And Ryan spoke of the properties across from Stella, 1007 and 1009 Melrose Avenue. So that's the little, it's like a dental office. I don't forget what it was, but anyway, to me, it looks like that. And then skip one house and then one. Is it right next door? It's right next door. So just to the east. And so those properties, they have particular characteristics, mostly that they had each property had a driveway onto Melrose. And, when those homes were built, I wasn't city attorney. I don't think I was on the earth, but they have a house, they need a driveway. It was pretty easy. Well, Melrose has become much, much, much more congested and busy. There's a traffic light, as you know, at Melrose, Bellevue, Kosher. Several points in our discussions, city engineers, including Ryan, have said there is no way we would ever allow or recommend that a driveway, much less two driveways, be placed that close to that intersection. But there it is. And so this project gave the city, in my word at least, an opportunity to say to the property owners, look, can we talk about doing something different so that you give up those driveways? And they were willing to talk, and we reached an agreement. And what happened is we allowed them to put some parking in the rear yard, and they agreed to that. But that arrangement was a little bit, from a legal standpoint, more complicated than just sitting down, talking, going through just compensation and appraisers, reaching the deal, signing it, and writing a check. And that's because our zoning ordinance wouldn't permit what looked to be the logical solution to cutting off access to Melrose for those properties. They still have tenants. Residents, they still need a place to park. And so in that situation last year, the council did what the council will be doing, start to do tonight, which I will get to. But the council said, well, this is a special situation. And so we think this is a good idea. General feedback from the property owner, this looks like a good idea. let's change the zoning ordinance to give both the property owner and the city some flexibility, some latitude. So if somebody says, well, I'd like there to be a fence here, I want to put my garage there, I want to pay this much of my yard. So if someone were to say those things, that the city, perhaps the city attorney, says something other than you can't, or zoning ordinance doesn't permit it. And so what ordinance number 260 does is it makes some special considerations with respect to 10 Kozier Avenue. And as Ryan said, Mary Sue, Laura Bowers are here, the owners of that property. It starts the process. So this is the first consideration of an ordinance that would relax or would actually remove setback pavement percentage, maximum pavement percentage, and permitting a garage to be placed in the front yard, because as Ryan said, it's kind of goofy, but from a zoning standpoint, there is no backyard. So where do I put my garage? So what this ordinance does is it creates flexibility. I have been probably the least involved in discussions with Laura and Mary Sue, but there have been discussions and they're ongoing, including today with emails, and they will continue. Discussions about, well, like exactly, or as much as you can say exactly, where do you want your garage and how much pavement and so forth, so that when there's more definition, I'll use that phrase, an agreement can be reached and signed to say, okay, here's the agreement. And of course, we do have the financial part, and there is the appraisal, as I've said. But none of that detail, none of that moving forward with an agreement can occur without the zoning ordinance being changed. So step one is public hearing, publish notice, send out notice to neighboring properties, including the owners of the 10 Kozier, to say we're going to have a hearing about changing the zoning ordinance. Ordinance requires three considerations unless the council collapses, but tonight is first consideration of 260, which removes certain zoning restrictions as it concerns this particular property. And I do want to make one additional point. The typical approach of zoning is that a council, a city council or a board of supervisors or anybody else that has that kind of zoning authority, you can't sort of hopscotch. You can't say, well, on this property, there's a 10-foot setback, but over here, there's a 50-foot setback. You can say this neighborhood or properties with this kind of use, it's not like every property has to have exactly the same rules and regulations. You look at our zoning ordinance, they don't. If you're in the R1 zone or if you're in the different zone. But within zones, particularly if it's, for a zoning authority, city council, to say, well, we're gonna focus on this one property and treat it differently, you have to have a reason, right? And I've given you a fairly long-winded explanation of the reason as it relates to the Melrose Complete Streets project. But that's why at the top of this ordinance, there's a bunch of findings that the council makes about the comprehensive plan that was adopted several years ago that supports from a community standpoint in the engagement with citizens then, the project, Melrose Complete Streets project, and other findings. But I wanted to mention that. So that's my introduction to ordinance number 260.
Troy has a comment.
Sure. I'd like to thank Steve for giving that very, very thorough explanation. I certainly couldn't have done it. And I'd like to thank Ryan and the property owners and Tim Greenwood from Steve's office for all the time that's already gone into this. This is a very, very complicated. There's four properties, as Steve said, that are more complicated. And I've stepped away from those because they will be rocking out of my level of expertise. But if it hasn't been abundantly clear, staff recommends council approval of this.
So. Is there any reason it can't collapse in number?
That's a good question. There's no, council can collapse Well, three readings didn't want it for once. I think given some of the ongoing discussions, ongoing with the property owners, I think if the council were inclined, I think I would recommend that you just adopt it as it's written for the first reading tonight. I think it very well may be that we come back with a revised ordinance for the special meeting on June 30. And if we make any changes, well, then we kind of have to start over with the first reading. So then you might want to collapse it.
Thank you, Steve, for going through all the history of that and everything for the public that can listen to this and hear that, too. It's very good. So we have first consideration of ordinance number 260. I'm not going to read it because he explained it so well. Is there a motion by Nick? Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Lisa. Discussion. Roll call vote.
Moore.
Aye.
Schroeder absent. Swales.
Aye.
Dwyer. Herbol.
Aye.
Motion carries 4-0-1. First consideration.
Thank you. Steve, you spoke a little bit about 2732 also.
Yes, 2632. So 2632 concerns Paul Moore's property. And back several years ago, city was doing some improvements in the Gulf View, Melrose, neck of the woods, and reached an agreement with Paul. Paul contributed financially. The city made some accommodations. We placed two ADA accessible parking spaces in front of 116 Golf View, adjacent to Stella's parking lot. And we said, you know, this is in the public street, this is in the public right of way. So these accessible spaces can be used by anybody who has an accessible sticker. But we're also going to agree that given the lay of the land in the Stella parking lot, we're going to give the Stella building owner a special agreement, a non-exclusive access agreement to use those spaces, not exclusively, they're available for anybody, but then that those would count toward the ADA accessible, the number of ADA accessible spaces required for that size of the building. And as a part of that arrangement as well, one of the reasons we did that was because the city then removed an ADA accessible space that was sort of right in front of the Stella building at the time of the turn. That's the historical note. Now we're doing something different, as you know, and changing the dynamic of that whole intersection and building parking lot. So there's two things that Resolution 2632 it does. One is it rescinds that prior. And so that will be my advice, so to speak, with regard to those two spaces on Golf View. But it says that in the new city right-of-way, the new parking lot, there will be two spaces there, and that those two spaces sort of take the place of the ones that have been on Golf View insofar as there's a non-exclusive ability for that building or its occupants or its patrons to use those spaces, and importantly, that those spaces count toward Paul's building's ADA accessible requirements. So you're taking away the agreement or rescinding the agreement for what had been on Golf View, and you're basically renewing that agreement in the parking lot. That's 2632.
Thank you. We have consideration of resolution number 2632 that Steve just explained. Is there a motion? A motion by Lisa. Sorry. Second. Second by Doug. This discussion. Roll call vote.
Sure. Swales.
Aye.
Dwyer.
Aye.
Herbol.
Aye.
Moore.
Aye.
Motion carries 4-0-1.
Thank you. And we have 2533. And are you speaking on that too?
So 2633 through 2639, you have to do more time. And they are different because they, as I said earlier, so they all relate to Pearl's Fleet Street project. Sometimes we're buying property from property owner. Sometimes we're buying a temporary construction easement. Sometimes we're buying a permanent easement.
And then each one of the ordinance, the resolutions 26 through 33 through 26, 39 relates to a particular property that's of course identified in the legal report, but also in the ordinance itself. And every one of these, each one of these resolutions has attached to it an agreement that's been signed by the respective property owner, whereby the property owner grants the city the rights that I talked about, and the city treasurer is authorized to pay the property owner the appraised estimate of compensated value from the real estate appraisal from 2025. The appraisal, there's a slight correction to my legal report. The appraiser, you know, they get the, you know, it doesn't go down to pennies usually. I guess maybe it does sometimes. Anyway, they do an appraisal and then they say, well, let's round it up to the next $100. And so the compensation value in the appraisals is rounded up to the next $100. I think I said in my legal report that staff recommends rounding it up because the property owners have been very reasonable and it would cost us a lot more money. Besides that, that's true. But the fact is that the appraised value or the appraised value of the taking is rounded up to the next $100. So each and every one of these resolutions, 2633 through 2639, just goes property by property and proves the agreement that the property owners have signed for the city to acquire the things it's acquired in exchange for the compensation set forth in each resolution, which, as I've said a couple of times, comes straight from the appraisal. And that's so, like I said, you need to do them one at a time. But if we want to go through the detail of exactly 10 feet here and 20 feet there, then I will stop talking. Ryan can start with them. But the bottom line is that these are all specced out in the resolutions. But that's what's going to be.
Thank you, Steve. This is consideration of resolution 2633 first, and then we'll do 39. Is that what you recommend?
So it'd be through 30. So 20, 33, 34, 35.
Okay, you want us to go? Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. When you were covering that, you were covering 33, 34.
Right.
Yeah.
All the way through 30.
Okay, I got it. Thank you. Is there a motion for resolution 2633? A motion by McKenzie. Is there a second? Second by Lisa. Discussion. Roll call vote.
Swales?
Aye.
Dwyer?
Aye.
Herbold?
Aye.
Moore? Schroeder absent. Motion carries 4-0-1.
Thank you. So then we'll go to consideration of resolution 2634. And is there a motion? Motion by Nick, second by Lisa. Discussion? Okay, roll call vote.
Dwyer?
Aye.
Herbold?
Aye.
Moore?
Aye.
Schroeder absent. Swales?
Aye.
Motion carries 4-0-1.
Okay, the next one is consideration of resolution 2635. Is there a motion? Motion by Ned, second. Second by McKenzie. Discussion. Roll call vote.
Herbold?
Aye.
Moore?
Aye.
Schroeder absent. Swales?
Aye.
Dwyer. Motion carries 6-0-1.
Okay, then we'll go down to consideration of resolution number 2636. Is there a motion? Motion by Lisa, second by Nick. Discussion. Roll call vote.
Moore.
Aye.
Schroeder absent. Swales.
Aye.
Dwyer. Herbold.
Aye.
Motion carries 4-0-1.
Thank you, Council. We have consideration of resolution 2637. Is there a motion? Motion by Nib, second by McKenzie. Discussion. Roll call vote.
Okay, I've lost track. Who did I start with last time?
Sorry, but Lisa, I think last time.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. Swales.
Aye.
Dwyer.
Aye.
Herbold.
Aye.
Moore.
Aye.
Motion carries 4-0-1.
We have consideration of resolution number 2638. Is there a motion? Motion by Lisa, second by Doug. Discussion. Roll call vote.
Dwyer.
Aye.
Herbold.
Aye.
Moore.
Aye.
Schroeder absent. Swales.
Aye.
Motion carries 401.
Okay, and the last one on the list is consideration of resolution number 2639. Is there a motion by Nick and a second by McKenzie? Discussion. Roll call vote.
Herbold.
Aye.
Moore. Schroeder absent. Swales.
Aye.
Dwyer.
Aye.
Motion carries 401.
Thank you, Council. Will any other questions for Steve?
I might add a big thought. So then on June 30th, the special meeting, we definitely will have some more, we're getting some more signatures. Somebody's having a medical procedure, couldn't get signed. So we'll have some more of very much the same of what you just adopted. And then my hope is that we'll have probably some revisions to the zoning ordinance and an agreement with Mayor Sugin for that's what we're working for, so that we can consider that. So this isn't the last thing we're going to do. And then my legal report did set forth kind of a general timeline of construction, which I think you're aware of. That's all I have to for that.
Thank you. The council and I really appreciate all the work our city staff has been doing, working with our residents to get through this and bring all these to our meeting. And the next one will be, like you said, June 30th. Okay, we'll go on to Troy. Troy.
Thank you. I have a few items on my report that I'd like to touch base on and then two considerations for council. On my report, I just wanted to specifically note, as part of the Melrose Streets project and pavement patching that is to be done, there will be times when one lane of Melrose is closed to traffic between Sunset and Gulfview. During those times, as previously been briefed, inbound traffic, so eastbound traffic will always be allowed, and westbound traffic will need to detour. The detour will be westbound on Melrose to northbound on Gulfview to westbound on Grand, which turns into Sunset, and then dumping back out on Melrose. Ryan made notification, or I spoke with Transit at one of the meetings I had this last week, and Ryan then had a discussion with them. They went through the route and identified some overhanging branches that they thought were a concern. I asked Brian Jensen to go out and check those trees, and he identified 15 trees, 15 different properties, that trees were below the 13 feet clearance that is required by our ordinances and code. I don't know if Brian has sent those notices out, but he intends or has already sent out
their applications.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. For my neighbor to talk about.
Okay,
yeah.
So I wanted you all to be aware, because I expect that you may get some inquiries to that. There were 15 properties. I listed them in my report. One of the properties is actually owned by the city here. It's a lot immediately east of OUP, so we'll have to take care of our show. But I wanted to make sure you're aware of that. Just briefly on Swisher Track Trails project, that continues. We are getting the word out more and more and more. And I'd like to backtrack once more. Nuisance issues. I want to talk about some nuisance properties first. I jumped ahead of that. 101 Island Drive. This is the property owned by Joseph Heath at the end of Highland, kind of on that island spur. He pulled a building permit on that, I believe, nearly 3 years ago now. I think it was sometime in 23. Started construction, stalled. I've had numerous conversations with him to try to rectify or resolve several issues. And while he did resolve some, the incomplete construction, his building permit is long since expired. The construction is still incomplete. He has a completed foundation that is accurate at the front and drops off probably 12 feet or more in the back, and is an attractive nuisance to the neighborhood, and I believe creates a public safety concern. And then he also erected a privacy fence, a partial privacy fence, in what would be his front yard between his property and the property immediately to the west of him. Joe maintains that he who believes he had permission or implied permission from city staff to do that, but he never applied for a city permit. I believe the permit would have been denied upon review, but even if it would have been issued, we would not now have something to base action on with referencing the issue or wasn't. Joe stopped communicating with me. There was a lapse in communication. I continue to hear from residents, and now I think appropriately, not just about the nuisance issues, but about my inability to resolve them. I honestly thought that I could do with conversation and mediation. As part of my report, I have some more detailed information on it, including recommendations that I take this to the city, to city attorney, the city should take all necessary legally allowed measures required to resolve the safety and nuisance non-compliance issues associated with the property, to include compel compliance by the property owner and or levy recurring fines and or perform the work required to remedy the safety and nuisance non-compliance issues with the costs assessed to the property owner and or any other action legally permitted to resolve the non-compliance and safety issues. I notified Joe of this today. We had agreed upon previously that emails would be the designated form of communication. Literally within minutes of me sending them that notification, he contacted me and is interested and motivated to resolve the situations. I still think the city needs to move forward or be ready to move forward with the recommendations as I made them. But at this point, Joe expressed a willingness to remove the fence with partial compensation for at least the materials that he put into the fence, $600. And he was willing to, or suggested that the city use that money instead of compensating him to erect a fence, a barrier around the foundation, or at least the part at grade to prevent access to the foundation. I don't think that's the city's responsibility to do that in any way, shape, or form. I think Joe should do that. And if he wants to apply that $600, that's money well spent to remedy that. Even during this council meeting, he has sent me fences that he has identified. He's at a local store identifying some 5 and 6 foot fences that he's asking that this would be appropriate. So I guess update beyond what's in my report is currently Joe is expressing motivation to and a willingness to resolve those issues in the very immediate future. Again, I don't think the city should put on hold further action, but I want council to be aware of the full situation there. Any questions about that particular property before I go on?
But what's his long-term plan then?
Thank you. I should have mentioned that. As of last year when I spoke with him, his intent was, and he said that he was actively trying to sell the property. He shared with me that between purchase price of the property and foundation and unforeseen foundation expenses, he believes that he has way more into the property than he's going to be able to recover. He's going to take a loss. I don't know what he's asking for, but that's what he told me last fall. And when I spoke with him today, he said that he's been desperately trying to sell it. People have been helping him do that. He's still hopeful that he can make it happen. He named some names of people that were potentially interested or that he was working with, but I don't know where they are in those negotiations. Again, if that is his goal, that's what he's expressed to me, I think it's in everybody's best interest, Joe, the neighborhood, and the cities, if he can make that happen. And I've been reluctant to take further legal course of action that would mean that more difficult for him to do. However, that has failed to resolve the situation, and I it's come to the point that I don't disagree with community members who are expressing frustration by inability to resolve it.
Mr. Steve, do we have anything on the books as far as, not that I'm advocating this or suggesting it, but what do we have in place as far as condemnation procedures? How far out does that have to go before you get that function?
They can turn the condemnation for like an unsafe or safe situation. Yeah, they're I don't know the particulars off the top of my head, but
okay.
We definitely would have to give plenty of notice. It would be a process. I think that if I think that there are better, more effective, and easier and legal strategies for moving across, and we can prosecute him and ask the court to order him to make it safe, coming into compliance.
Well, the good thing is it's in a desirable location, University of Heights, so I don't think it would ever get to that. Even a proper sellable unit. But it's not like a sell at the end of the railroad tracks and stuff in the railroad tracks.
Is it a new foundation you look for?
It is a new foundation that's boarded. It is a property that previous building proposal was denied by the city because of it's a sensitive slope area, so where a structure can actually be erected is very limited. And Joe did have a foundation. We have plans. He submitted the plans. He did pull a work permit, a building permit, and started. We had the foundation dug in, and it's a very deep foundation because of the slope. In the process of pouring the foundation or digging the foundation, they discovered basically a cavity down in the slope that had been filled with debris from something that needed to be all excavated out. And the solution he chose to do was to fill that void with more concrete, which significantly increased his concrete loss. When I've had last fall just exploratory conversations with Steve and with Terry Garrett about what the city might or might not be able to do. Now, if the city were to go in and remove the fence, that's a relatively small fence that could be assessed to Joe and the body. But the city to go in and remove the foundation would be a huge expense. The city would have to upfront pay and assess those costs to the property owner or to the property, and hopefully get paid sometime in the future when it was sold. Joe is, unless his condition has changed since when we last shared it, but Joe openly told me he's financially not in a good spot right now, in large part because of the money that he was put into the property. So the foundation was poured new. Terry Garrett's concern is that whether it's Joe or somebody else that came in and pulled a building permit to continue construction, that foundation was never meant to sit exposed to the elements for 3 years. And Terry would require, or the city should require, a full inspection of the foundation and all conduit underneath the foundation to make sure that it is still a sound.
I guess my hope would be that, I mean, number one, if it's not safe right now, I think we've got to make it safe. I don't know. I know the fence is too high, but I mean, the real concern would be if someone got on your property and got hurt, right? So right. I think even if the city, if the city needed to just pay for it to be done and then, send them the bill, try to lien the property, I think we should do everything we can to make it safe. Then I think we should clearly communicate the consequences if he doesn't, comply by a certain date. And the hope is that he does just sell it and that someone, the developer, can come in, whoever, with money to actually make it work and not be a blight on the community. Do you think that's, so what is the status of that in terms of, not being dangerous for a kid walking along and fall? I guess I need to look at it.
So the front of the foundation is 40. No, it's the front of Plymouth building, but the front of the foundation is 40 feet wide. It drops off significantly quickly down either side, especially what would be the right side or the west side of the structure. It would take more than 40 feet of fence to go across the front, probably 45 or 50, so that you went across the front and beyond the edges of the other the side foundation.
So currently someone could walk along, fall down in it?
No, they could walk, it's at grade, they could walk out onto it. The slab is at grade level, they could walk out onto it. It is a steep and deep ravine. The sides then fall away, the ground then falls away. So when you get the back side of it, you are 12 to 14 feet above ground, if not more. So if a fence were erected across the front of the foundation and down a length of either side until you got beyond where the foundation was tall enough to easily get onto it, if that makes sense. I don't know that you have to actually encircle the whole foundation so much as go across the front and partially down the sides. Again, Joe is doing the homework while this meeting's going on. He has asked whether two different styles of 100-foot fencing would be adequate. I told Ryan already, I asked if he might stick around after the meeting so I could get this at the meeting, because I don't know. That's the primary safety concern. He did address the erosion issues and the unmowed front yard, I guess, if you know, last year. It needs to be addressed again this year as far as the mowing. But it's been an overgrown ravine since before he added. So those are still nuisance issues. He's not in compliance, but those are not the primary safety concerns.
So, Steve, I mean, could we give Troy direction and the ability to go, if he doesn't get it done, and I know it's kind of been like, I'm going to.
Yeah.
Can the city pay for like construction fence at least to just be put up for safety purposes to run along it? And then, you know, kind of like, you know, make it safe and clearly communicate and then be ready to drop, you know, the hammer down if he doesn't meet our deadlines, because it seems like this just drug on forever. And I also don't want to have, you know, someone get hurt. And if he's really just can't pay for things right now, I don't want it to be that, you know, he just may be stuck where he just can't pay for it. I know nothing personally about his financial situation.
Yeah. Could we put a lien on the property to pay for it, something like that?
That's a good way to do that. Definitely the city can give a notice that he needs to bring it to address safety by a quick date. And if not, we're going to require him to pay for it. As I said, more longer term, you know, I think we cite and prosecute.
Yeah.
And it's not in process in terms of like we have things filed, but we've got documents getting ready to go, and I think they're just about ready to go, which we've been ready to do.
The notice has been given that last year he was told of the violations or told that it's all over again.
So Steve, do we need any like formal vote or anything to give Troy authority if he needs
just
to get fence?
Just a council.
Is that the consensus? That's...
Yeah, I mean, I think a formal vote. I mean, I think the city staff has implicit authority to enforce its ordinances.
Make it safe, and then, yeah, I would hope that he has a little notice. Just, I know this has gone on forever, but it does, to the extent it is, just his inability to pay for fixes here. He needs it. I mean, this is the time to sell things. The hope would be he would be able to, if he knows it's coming and has a little bit of notice, it's really, we have like a date, then either he gets it done or I mean either sells it or you get to that point, then it probably is going to be the pricing.
So the guidance that are the assistance that I would give, that does not have to come to today's meeting, I would rather get it from Steve, but to do both of the fixes would require, if the city were to do it, would require me or somebody at the direction of the city to go onto this property to erect that fence or to remove the privacy fence that is in violation and to erect a barrier to make the foundation safe. And my experience is primarily from the law enforcement side, and I wouldn't do anything like that without a warrant. So I would need guidance on that. And again, it does not need to come tonight, but that's guidance that I need to know how to make that.
Does he need more than 30 days or 60, you know?
No, I don't believe so, but I can share the notices, you know, whatever, but I can share the notice that he was already given. And I think so.
Does he have property insurance that would cover somebody walking on and got injured? I mean, you kind of personal property, person, liability?
I do not know the answer for that.
You know what, criminal insurance, dinner, like the beer?
Given his current situation, I doubt that, but I don't know the answer.
If part of jumping in the street, he was a guy had property insurance that would not protect the city.
Correct. If the city was deemed to be, they were aware of this issue and hadn't taken steps to burn them.
So, Steve, do you have, I mean, it'd be just empowering Troy under the ability to abate a nuisance.
Yeah.
That under Iowa code, that just would want to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Clear authority to go arrange for the fence to be put up.
Yeah, I think the council's been clear in terms of its desires, and that's all the authority that the Troy or city staff needs.
So, I mean, Troy, do you feel good about that?
Yes, absolutely. Are there two other nuisance issues that were listed that I want to make you aware of, just because I'd like to make you aware of those things? One is a side obstruction on this Sunset Island. I have tried, I've told anybody that I've had contact with that the plantings that are exceeding 30 inches, so the grass clumps of this and the milkweed, they can have them, they can take them, they can replant them, they can do whatever they want with them. I've had no takers to that. I just checked today and those plantings are still there. That city property, those will go away. I hate to just tear them down, but that's what will happen sometime in the very, very near future that's to me. And then I received a complaint just a few days ago about vegetation overgrowing the sidewalk along Melrose, that stretch between Emerald and Sunset. There's all those arborvitae that kind of grow out over it. They've been trimmed back. I don't think that it's particularly bad, but the complaint obviously did to us, but Jensen's alone to that. But those are the traditional complaints. This is some complaints that were issued or weren't included on my report. And Swisher Track Trails, you can read about that, but it is continuing to be, it's snowballing. People are hearing more about it. It's very favorably received. We're at 90% final design. I attached some diagrams and page or illustrations to my report in case you want to look at them, but I have more to share if anybody would like that. It was featured during the spring hike with Forester Mark Vitosh. We had those materials out here where everybody gathered. Again, it generated a lot of interest. And especially after the hike, people came back and had more questions and took some of the materials I had. It was also displayed at the bike breakfast. Aside, thanks to Jeff Farrell with Jeff's Bike and Ski for making this fantastic bagels and lox. But it was displayed there, and again, it received a lot of interest and a lot of questions. So anyway, that's moving forward. Hope to have final design by the end of this month. We are on track to complete that and then potentially go out to bid next month if that's what council wants to have that. Cleanup day, I just wanted to say thanks to everybody who had a hand in that, John and Lisa in particular.
And Tim.
Not here.
Yeah,
that's true. He was there. Was a huge success. Again, it was supposed to start at 8:30. The first resident showed up with a carload of stuff at 8:15. I was able, because we had plenty of help on site, I was able to go help collect and transport items for a few residents in University Heights. And a lot of the stuff was repurposed. Lisa and I were the last two to leave. And even after the dumpster was filled and we closed it up, two people showed up who basically said they had nothing in their home. And could they take furniture, area rug, and other things out of the dumpster? So I know a lot of the stuff is rehauled, and that's fantastic to me. I also wanted to mention, just because it's a topic of concern for the community and for council, e-scooters, bikes, and motos, e-scooters, e-bikes, and e-motos. This is discussed at about any transportation or even the urban policy meeting that I go to. It was discussed at the TTAC meeting. It was discussed at the Urban Policy Board. We had University Heights Lion. Chief Akers and Councilor Dwyer and I participated in a focus group, if we will, but specific to University Heights on policy development as part of our safety action, the area-wide safety map and safety action planning is done by MPOJC and a consulting firm that we've hired. It is being addressed across the state, both at city and state levels. There's just not yet an agreed upon or accepted solution to this. But it is something that I know we're concerned on, and it's being worked on. I don't know if Jinzi has something to add to it or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously we all know it's a topic of discussion and everyone's trying to kind of figure it out. I don't know if, because of our timing with Melrose Complete Project and that being the main issue in our area with it, if it's something we want to be really proactive on, or if it's something that we kind of just wait and see what everyone else is doing before we decide what we want to do. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's one of the unique things we can do being a smaller community, the police force, is that we could be, an example that pilot project in a sense. And the draft that I had put together had some ideas that may or may not go, but some things like reasonableness and speed and slowing down, flipping close to people, those are the things that I hear about people. People just don't seem to, even if it's even if they don't get hurt, they don't like to get buzzed by someone zooming by 20 miles an hour or whatever.
That's
with no notice. So that was my attempt in the drafting to try to hit all those things. But there are different areas with different uses and different widths of sidewalks, and we're gonna have a trail that's gonna bikes using it. Josh's Schomburger's, mountain biker has explained, the different types of uses and how, that will all work together with walkers and all that. So I think we would be potentially an interesting community to get out front and just try to see, if we pass something and it doesn't, we see some problems, we can go back to the drawing board pretty efficiently, I think. I'm not speaking on other communities being less efficient, but I feel like you'd be able to try.
And I would agree with what Nick says. There's nothing that prevents us from taking action. I think in a bigger picture, we should be consistent with whatever happens community-wide and area-wide, but we do not need to wait for that to happen. And perhaps if this council were to consider something, that would either become a model for the local, for the expanded community, or if the expanded community, the larger community, took their own action or different action, we could then consider how to meld the two. So I mean, it doesn't have to be either or.
I agree. I don't think we have to have it our ways. So it's our way.
Right.
We do something and they figure out something else with time.
Right.
Oh, that makes sense. And I think there is a value to being consistent, between, especially again, it's like a smaller community. But we're not, I guess, as far as I know, been looking at what Chief Acres has sent over.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see anything that I'm like, oh my gosh, I'd love that exact thing to be, our solution. And we do have a little bit of a unique situation with a big parking lot on the hospital on the other side and being kind of a thoroughfare for scooters to zoom back forth. That's my thought.
No, I think that's great. I appreciate the feedback, and I'll continue to work with you on your draft and probably the jump being Chief Edwards.
That's all I have. My report was late going out, I have the resolution yet, but if when my report, it's all I have on my report, was a little late going out. So if when you read, if you have any questions, you feel free to reach out to me. I have two considerations for resolutions beyond my report to present to council. First is consideration of resolution 2627. This is our contract with Johnson County Seats for paratransport. It's something that it's a yearly contract that we agree, or a yearly contract or MOU, but it's a yearly agreement that we have with Seats to provide services to our community, to our residents. It is unchanged from the last fiscal year. It's contracted at a per ride fee of $30 per provision of paratransit for upcoming fiscal year. I asked City Attorney Ballard to review it just to make sure that I wasn't missing a thing, he reviewed it, said that he had no concerns. I would present it to council for consideration for approval. Resolution number 2627, authorizing the mayor to sign the city clerk to attest to the FY27 agreement between Johnson County, Iowa and the City of University Heights, Iowa for provision of paratransit service within the corporate limits of University Heights.
So moved.
Okay, is there a second? Second by Lisa. And there was a motion by Nick, if you missed it.
Fair question?
Yes.
We have the data on how many riders we have per year.
John, are you able to answer that?
What does that cost us?
I can say that I don't think we've had anyone apply for paratransit in the past year. Meaning anyone new applying. We have a couple people who qualify.
Right.
But it's a small number.
It's a small number.
We were at four users.
I think it's five or less. I talked to Don last year about it, and it's a small number.
Yeah.
Does that sound right, John?
It's a small number. It's a last number. It's 20 to 30 rides.
Right. It's a small number of people using the service.
Oh yeah, small number.
Like I said, we haven't had any new applicants in the past year. It's all people who have been.
Yeah, we had them before then. Yeah.
Does it cost the city any money for this 21 year? As far as agreement,
we just paid them $30 a night.
Yes.
Okay, so resolution 2627, we have a motion, a second. We have some discussion. Any more discussion? Roll call vote.
Moore?
Aye.
Schroeder, absent. Swales?
Aye.
Dwyer?
Aye.
Herbold?
Aye.
Motion carries 401.
And the last item I have for council is consideration of resolution 2626. This is mostly a housekeeping item. It has to do with confirming compensation for University Heights staff. As Steve Ballard mentioned earlier, as far as our annual audit, one of the things that in the past it was noted that we've been, I think, very good about, we've been very diligent about making sure we've done this ever since it was noted, but council needs to specifically approve annual compensation for staff. All the numbers that are in the proposal or in the resolution have been discussed and approved as part of the budgetary process. So none of that is new, but this just puts it in a nice clean housekeeping resolution that confirms city staff compensation.
Is there a motion, Tom? Motion by Lisa, second by McKenzie. Discussion. It's up on the board, the salaries. Roll call vote.
Schroeder, absent. Swales?
Aye.
Dwyer?
Aye.
Herbold?
Aye.
Moore?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Any other questions for Troy?
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. So we'll go to the clerk's report.
I don't have anything else to add to my report other than the fact that we will ask you to approve a Class C liquor license renewal for Maggie's Farm Restaurant. They've completed all the steps through the Alcohol Beverages Division. Chief Akers has conducted a background check. Building Inspector Gert has done a structure and health check. That's a simple motion.
Okay, is there a motion? So motion by Nick, second by Lisa. Discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Same sign. Okay, motion carries 4-1. Okay, thank you. And any questions for Mike? Okay, we'll go on to the treasurer's report, payment of the bills, and John, you sent that around.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. No additional items to add to the list of warrants. I do want to put one caveat on the treasurer's report. Johnson County sends out the disbursement notices the 10th of the month. That will be tomorrow. We have not received that out. The breakdown between general property taxes to and my avenue. So my report, how lump sum was tired of now. And so there's a broad category. So I put that time wall out there. We don't know what the fifth is, is or not. We will know later this year.
And as you know, in the warrants, there's items in there from Ryan's report. And so when we approve the warrants, there's those items like the bid for the... the quotation for the paid parking, that one. Treatment marking,
So there's a bill in there for rectangle rent last year. Street sign, and there's chromobile cleaners for sustainable landscapes. There's also complete metals for group on this project.
Thank you.
So I guess I can cover those real fast since we brought them up before we get to my report. But the invoice number one for the RRFBs at Sunset and Northwest, which are the new signs and the flash move difference to our last for requesting. That's just all work is done one week, one day, right? So
It's the entire project cost except for 3% retainage. So it's $21,603.84 is that first invoice, which is included in the lines list. And then the permeable paver cleaning for 2026, Sustainable Landscape Solutions completed sort of the spring round of that. And so that invoice for both Gulfview and Gulfport permeable paver area is $3,752.44. So both of those are included.
Thank you. Is there any objections paying the warrants that John set that's listed? Hearing none, the warrants will be paid by unanimous consent. Thank you. Any questions for John? Thank you. We'll go on then to finance. Do you have anything, Mick, today? Okay, very good. We'll go on to community protection, and Chief Akers has a written report. Thank you.
Good evening. Not a lot to add to the written report. A couple of highlights. Thank you, Lisa Moore, for getting all of the things on the website that we spent an afternoon doing.
Thank you for your
and a couple of things. Nobody's mentioned it yet, the bike breakfast. Bike to work breakfast. We had a great turnout. Food is delicious. Jeff's from down on South Gilbert Street came and provided food. Pretty good flow of people. Well attended. There are some, Mike Rocky doesn't do justification for the photographs, but all the same. About the only thing that I want to point out on this is Officer Jasmine, who is one of our drone pilots, has been asked to participate with the Savannah Bananas and actually fly a drone for the security for the stadium during that, which is, he was hand selected by university. So it's kind of a neat little film. So, beyond that, can I add?
Sure.
We're going
to talk about that. E-bikes up stuff.
Yeah. Any questions?
Being the chair. Yes, you always include some pictures for me. I appreciate that. And then we'll go down. And Mackenzie, did you want to add anything?
No, I think you guys gave me the input that I was capable of.
I do have one thing I want to bring up on you. The new flashing light up there on the Oakcrest. Seems like people still don't understand how that thing works or is supposed to work, but maybe we should make that light red instead of yellow. Because people just come up to it and it goes through it anyway. And so we're back to putting like graffiti up there to do what you used to do.
With school letting out, I can tell you that the officers reported that the students were doing well with it. The adults, I don't think there is such a maybe that's something that I can get for Councilmember Moore and put something on the city website, or we can have it staff on the part of that new system. Usual morning, there's 5 to 6 walkers that will come through, and then we went to the room. So that was kind of pit. We did still on, how the amount of people coming through.
Doug, your concern wasn't used by pedestrians, so was it motorists or
not? It's motorists that they don't know what to do, and they just coast right through it. It's like defeating the whole purpose of having the light there. So
I think some temporary enforcement might
result. Gotcha.
I guess just a reminder, it's a warning signal. It's not a traffic signal. So it's not like as soon as those lights are on, you're not like required to stop and at that crosswalk, right? By state law, you're required to yield to a pedestrian. So the lights are there just to like provide an extra alert to vehicles while they're further away, that there's likely a pedestrian in that crosswalk, right? To provide some sort of enhanced warning. So it's just to make that clear, but there's not like a legal responsibility to stop if there's not someone already stopped at the crosswalk.
So we can't put a camera there either, like
sure.
Asking for it.
I hit the intersection like every day. It's kind of confusing also because there's the bus stop. So somebody in the crosswalk or somebody just standing in the bus stop. I just won't throw that element out there. And there is that confusion. And, you know, because when I come up Sunset, I got to cruise a little bit so I could see, you know, not just cars, but also cyclists or wandering pedestrians trying to cross. But there is that confusion because I want to turn right, but I see somebody standing there like, they're going to cross crosswalk or are they there for the bus stop? So I just, someone who frequents that intersection, just won't throw that out there. Where people are sound.
I understand your perspective on that, but many times I've sit in where they'll stop and just stand on that street corner and for a little bit and not proceed across. And so I certainly understand where you are, but I'm not sure if there's an easy way to remedy them without their.
No, I agree. And I'm not trying to defend the people he's thinking about that just negative running through them. It's weird.
Any other questions? Okay. We'll go on to streets and sidewalks and Ryan and Doug. Ryan, you want to start?
I can, yeah. So I'll start with Melrose Complete Street Project. We had a design team update like we do every month. And then just a couple of bullet points I had on my report were that the contract documents for 1009 Melrose Driveway project have been executed. We're waiting to confirm a pre-construction meeting date and get a schedule from the contractor to start work on that. And then that work will be starting up this month, basically. I guess just so everybody's aware of that. If you don't recall from our, when we approved the contract, it would begin this month. And it's required to be completed it's August or July 24th, actually, is when it's required to be completed. So then they will sod that area and will water the sod to make sure it's got as much time to be established prior to buses in the system. The other thing I've got going on is Paul Moore. I think Paul's here. I can't see him across the pillar, but we are working through the final plans for the electrical service converging. So I need to get with our electrical engineers to make some revisions for the electrical undergrounding rerouting inside the building and then get those to Paul for final review. And then we would send those out for a bid as well to get that work contracted out. And then obviously we talked about it, just continued coordination on right-of-way and easement work. Full red to underground utility joint trench project. So this is from George Street to the East City Limit. Obviously, we had a public hearing and issued plans for bid. We received one bid for that project work. It is a well-known and respected directional drilling company in the area from Walford. They're highly qualified to do the work, so you don't have any concerns in this contractor. The bid there's a letter of recommendation. So their bid was $315,436.50. And our estimate was around $295,000. So we came in just a little bit over, but very, very close to the estimate. I don't know if anybody has any questions on that. That contract will not start until July 6th. The contractors are not allowed to begin work until July 6th. We also have, as Steve mentioned, a special meeting for June 30 to try to make sure that we have another chance to formally approve any remaining easements that we have prior to that contract date for them to start work. I've spoken with the contractor and let them know that they that not all the easements are already finalized, so they're aware of that. And so they're if there are any complications to where at the properties that's not finalized easements, we obviously can't do work there yet. So that work would have to extend, or we'd probably have to extend the contract date to allow the contractor some more to prepare. So within those areas that we don't have if we don't use this funds. So just to bring that to everyone's attention as well, but I still would like to approve the contract because it'll take a couple of weeks to for the contractor to sign the contract, give us performance and payment bonds. And then also they have a 3-week lead time on materials. So they won't even really hardly have enough time to order stuff and get it here by July 6th. So without starting that process now, it's going to take even longer, which means they can't really feasibly complete prior to football season. So we're just wanting to make sure we push forward as much as we can and are prepared.
No, I have a question, and you're looking at me like, don't ask questions. I feel like you told me that they also have like a time frame window that they've got to have completed, correct?
Yep.
And that's in the contract as well.
Yeah, August 21 is their next date.
Okay.
But like I mentioned, if we don't have all the easements, that date will be I would do a change order to amend the date for their work. And that gives us a 2-week buffer. Till the football season.
Yeah.
So it's just.
Have a lot of a lot of my grand neighbors are asking me about how they're going to have their drive order going on for during those couple weeks that they're rerouting upgrade. And so.
Oh, that's a separate project.
Okay. But
I can talk about that one because I'll get to that one here in just a minute.
Okay.
I'll
talk to you. Maybe I'll just say. Oh, go ahead.
No, go.
I was just going to make a motion to pass the resolution number 2628.
2628 is for the joint utility transport. So this project, it's just to clarify, this project is for the directional drilling underground boring of the conduits that then the utility companies that are on the overhead utility will pull new wire through.
Okay.
And they'll hook up their new networks. So there's not only conduits, there's handholds, there's pedestals for services to houses, right?
This one is not the one that's in Melrose.
This is not the Melrose patching project.
Okay.
And then once the conduits are installed, that's not the end of the work. Utility companies still have to come and actually pull the cables, right? And they have to do that on their own work to actually hook up the networks. So that work to hook up the networks and pull the cables through will happen throughout the fall stages.
Okay, so we've got 2628 resolution reporting. Nick wanted to make the motion and second by Lisa. And I couldn't see, what was your estimate?
It was like $295,000.
Okay.
And it was $315,000 was the bid.
Thank you.
And I guess to that point, the utility companies are reimbursing the city for those costs. But with the exception of Mid-American Electric, that's because there's going to be costs that the city will incur. I always count those people on this part. But Mid-American Electric's required to relocate the overhead poles, and they will pay for the portion that is to relocate overhead and overhead, not for going underground, because there's additional cost to that. But since the city is requiring that they go underground, the city will pay that difference. And so as part of that agreement, which Mid-American is drafting, not bringing council at some point, once they finalize that, the city will likely just pay for their costs for this project, and then they'll take that down as a credit to the rest of the costs that they have for their project costs.
Okay, there is a motion and a second, and any further discussion? So this is resolution 2628, roll call vote.
Swales.
Aye.
Squire.
Aye.
Herbold.
Aye.
Moore.
Aye.
Schroeder absent. Motion carries 4-0-1.
Thank you, Lieutenant Reiner.
Yeah, so I think I've got them in order. So pavement marking, 2026 pavement marking. We got a quote for pavement marking this year. We've had some discussion already this spring about we've engaged Iowa City about doing the lane lines with their machines and then just boarding out the median symbols, the crosswalk bars and stop bars, et cetera, those types of portions, which are all walk behind handwork, I guess. The quote came in a little bit higher this year quite a bit higher this year compared to last year. for the unit price per station. So I called Allen. They said that they just evaluated how long it took them last year to complete the work within University Heights, and that this increase had, really has nothing to do with the reduced quantity or the portions that we sectioned off for Iowa City. So I mean, I guess in that sense, I don't expect it to go down if we were to reverse course and change what we had done and agreed to do with Iowa City for the lane lines, for the center line markings. I think it's just a product of higher prices for labor and material costs and market markets changing. So unfortunately, that's puts our total, our estimated total of costs, just a little bit above what we budgeted. We budgeted $14,000 for pavement markings for this fiscal year. The total would end up being $14,600 when you include both the Iowa City, the Pelling contract, but the Pelling quote is for $11,888.75. And council will consider resolution 2629 to accept that quotation for the 2026 pavement marking project. I guess let me know if there's any other questions.
Okay, so 2629 is for the council. Is there a motion by Nate? Second by Doug. And any further discussion? Roll call vote.
Dwyer.
Aye.
Turbol. Moore.
Aye.
Schroeder absent. Swales.
Aye.
Motion carries 4-0-1.
The Melrose Avenue on the report's label is panel replacements east of Sunset. So this is the project McKenzie was asking about. This is our Melrose Avenue pavement repair and utility improvements. So we will, in coordination with the City of Iowa City, this project will replace all the manholes, all the sanitary manholes between Sunset and George Street. We'll do some storm sewer manhole work and intake work at the George Street intersection on Sunset, or on Melrose and George Street cul-de-sac. There will be some water main work there as well at that intersection of George Street cul-de-sac. And then we'll do pavement patching on Melrose in the stretch that does not get reconstructed with the Melrose Avenue Complete Streets project. So this is between Sunset and sort of it kind of actually goes up to the intersection because there's a really bad pothole right west of the intersection of Fisher. So we're actually going to move and replace that section. That'd be temporary, but essentially to the curb of the road just outside, just adjacent to 10 Kozer, actually, is where we'll kind of finish our patching work for this project. And it'll be everything between Sunset and that portion. That is the area that does not require widening of the street because of the on-street parking lane that's there today. What we're doing is trying to make sure the pavement's in really good condition. So when we finish Melrose Avenue and the three streets, the bike lanes can be painted and there's no pop-ups on that stretch between Sunset and the bridge after that project's finished. So there is a detour. That's what I don't remember who was talking about it earlier. Troy was talking about it earlier about the trees on Grand. The detour is a 3-week detour. It's in the contract for 19 calendar days to provide them essentially a week and a half to do patching on the south half of Melrose on that stretch, while westbound traffic is detoured on Grand and up to Sunset, and eastbound traffic will run on the opposite direction, lane of travel, leaning towards the hospital. And then the second week and a half, they would flip traffic. Eastbound would be toward its regular lane. They would patch the pavement on the north half of Melrose in that stretch, and then westbound traffic would remain on the same detour. But it is set up in the contract that they only have, it's a critical closure, is what how we refer to it, but it's 19 calendar days. So it's not like the project starts and there's going to be a detour as soon as that happens. So what we will do is when they're doing the manhole work and the work at George Street, there's going to be some lane shifts and some loss of parking ability along Melrose, but we'll utilize what we can that's there today to keep traffic on Melrose as regular as possible, or at least two lanes each, one lane each way at all times until we're ready to actually replace the pavements on those. And that's when the detour would be installed.
And when staff consider options, like Kozer, for example, was another option, but that would require a left turn across traffic from Melrose to get onto Kozer require another left turn from Sunset to get back onto Melrose. Traffic on Melrose, well, it goes right past Nick's house. It's traffic to a residential neighborhood already. It would just be through, I get it, the people on Grand and Gulf, you aren't used to that. But residents can safely get in and out of their driveway. They do it on a daily basis right now.
I was like, it's going to be a short period. It's just a nuisance.
It is a nuisance. I understand that, but there is definitely a valid reason to be
right
why that detour was chosen.
Yeah, and the detour ends up being mostly right-hand turns, right, and at the two-man signal. So it should be the most efficient way to continue traffic flow through there.
We're going to qualify this point for an operator.
Yeah, I'll probably talk to Iowa City before we get to that point about the signal timing out front and see if they can all adjust that.
Do we ever contact the hospital to see if they put that in their announcement that there will be road closures? So maybe it was also makes people wild through horrible past things with the stadium.
We do notify the Jack, and as part of that notification service, the dispatch center, so the ambulance coming in, but what we're doing should not affect the ambulance.
Right.
So I don't know that they'll push that out to their employees, but
we have engaged Iowa City Transit as partner and the university's transit department and asked UI Transit to forward that on into the hospital, which they have. I've gotten emails their people are aware they have the traffic tour events.
Maybe if the person
there are people that always are complaining about the stuff at Sunset that work at the hospital that late, and then I never have an issue with that. I don't know what that problem is. And I was just wait till this hour, guys.
Whatever the first days were up, though, the second,
So a reminder that detour is not allowed to begin until after July 6th. Now, there seems to be a little bit of confusion as far as it starts on July 6th. That's not necessarily the case. Mm-hmm. It will start when they're ready to actually start that work, right? We want them to be done, but they need to be done on the George Street intersection before they move on to the Melrose panels. At George Street, we will build temporary driveways in the grass next to 1215 because we have to completely rip out that whole intersection to get to the structures and the pipe that needs to be realigned with it. And the pavement's not in great shape there anyway, so it's going to all be rebuilt. So
is part of what Iowa City pays for the panel where the pipes will burst in? Because I know we had the discussion of are we going to get a new pipe there because it broke twice?
Yeah.
And I think the answer was no, we're just going to keep fixing it. But I assume that means Iowa City's going to pay to keep fixing the actual street?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. So they will pay for those panels. Yeah. I don't think those panels were in our original plan. So I had already sent them the plan. So there was one area where they ripped out for a water main break, and I said, you're already planning to replace that. We're not going to pay for it. But the second pipe from this center was not in our area. It just so happens the first one is in the area that Lumen is already going to replace, because the Lumen, which is CenturyLink, they have a manhole structure, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with, but it's got a big pothole that just is selling on that pavement. So I had spoken with them, met with them on site last spring and determined that they had to replace four panels from. But last spring I was I don't know how we're going to accomplish this reasonably, right? So just told them to wait until we coordinated our other larger projects. So they are planning to rebuild their chimney. They have a vault, $100. So they are planning to rebuild that chimney above that vault because currently I think it's like cinder block, which is what all the sanitary manholes and the storm is that we are going to replace. So they're over time those will, the joints will separate. That's where we're getting infiltration issues. So they will rebuild that, and I told them that they could just flag that for the day on dollars, and then they could just backfill temporarily with rock until basically we'll be under construction interest. So they won't actually pave that back just through rock backfill until we get there with our teams where we have the back turns for me. So in coordination with that manhole work. Lumen will be routing conduits out and into the green space to the south, and they will be entering this joint trench, and then they will have new conduits in the joint trench all the way to the east side off court, which then they'll cross the street again. And so we should be able to remove or abandon two other structures that they have to the east at that point.
To enjoy the operating duties on the assistant. Why did I go into this as a perfection?
This one is really spidered up. Spiderweb, the whole thing is spiderweb. So there's a lot of things. So Lumen's also in conflict with the storm sewer on Melrose. So there was a lot of things going on with their stuff. We need to get them out of the way. So there's a lot of city by city will be relocating their fiber network also. And so
good job with the fence cycle.
Great. But sorry. So Nick had questions about the cost. The cost is what we're talking about, right? So the resolution 2630 is to approve a memorandum of understanding agreement with the city of Iowa City concerning the cost share for this pavement repair and utility improvements project. So yes, city of Iowa City will pay for all the manhole work when they're replacing the manholes, the sanitary department, the water division will pay for certain portions of the water main work. Those areas that weren't already associated with pavement removal that we were going to do, they'll pay for that pavement and replace them. That's required to complete those replacements. Now, to just be very clear for Nick, if we were already removing something, some of the decisions that IOC is making is because we're already removing something, they're saying, hey, we're going to utilize this opportunity to replace that manhole. And so that's a little different situation. Yes. And I don't argue with about that. It's just kind of a win-win for everyone.
Yeah. Okay, we just have resolution 2630 as Ryan read. Motion by McKenzie and second by Vincent. Discussion. Any further discussion? Roll call vote.
Herbold.
Aye.
Moore.
Absolutely.
Schroeder absent. Swales.
Aye.
Dwyer.
Aye.
Motion carries 4-0-1.
So the sidewalk repair project, the contractor is, I don't know if they'll get started this week due to some rain and stuff. He's got some other things he's wrapping up, but they'll plan to start fairly shortly. And then the RFBs, permanent pavers, we talked about. I guess the only other thing I had that are miscellaneous was we spoke with a contractor about a sanitary sewer service replacement at 27 All Court. I'm not. At this point, I haven't heard back if the property owners move it forward if that worked or not. But if anybody sees that area dug up, that would be funny. What's going on? Is the properties looking to replace their sanitary sewer service? If they've had issues with previously.
Any questions for Ryan?
Yes, Ryan. You got my email about the grand animal concerns that I ever put out also. Despite what I put in there, I'm going to put something on the website sooner and later with some of these things concerned that doesn't start until we go on my gate to be starting.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I guess
The detour of the one I
whatever other
soothing statements coming from you.
Yeah, I can. I'll just sense you just want some recap of what's happening and general timeline kind of thing.
Yeah. Any questions for Ryan? Paul, you had one. Do you want to come up here and ask your question?
Hey, Ryan, do we have a final instruction drawing still on boiling?
Still boring?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Did I send that to you already or not?
No.
Okay. I can send you the
question have an enlarged section just written by the rest of the script.
Yeah. Yep. Do you want a hard copy?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can give you that.
And then in regards to the 12240 Wolf single phase service. Did you get an answer on that?
I don't. I still need to meet with the electrical engineer. And then I'll send you the updated set once you get it before we issue that up for bid or anything.
I'll call you tomorrow. I got to land rich.
Okay.
Does anyone else in the audience have a question for Ryan?
Actually, the sidewalk replacements, I know we got a couple of squares that were marked that we need to replace, but usually a letter gets sent from the city, like you've got sidewalk that needs to be replaced and the city's contracted. You can take part of the city's contract or you can hire your own contractor, but we never got it.
Yeah.
As of the other stuff?
As of the other stuff.
Okay. Yes.
And so...
That makes sense.
Without knowledge of like exactly where the driveway was going to go and everything, like in discussion, especially with Steve, he was like, hey, don't send photos, make the door place things that'll get ripped out again. So it's really
a
make sure that the info.
Wow, we make thoughts. So that's great.
We did that like, once. Been married and didn't.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, that's the reason.
Thank you. Anyone, Clayton, did you want to say something?
I was just curious. When you're talking about,
could you come up? It's just easier. Thank you.
I'm curious about that fence in the foundation to protect your safety. How much is the fence?
I don't know. The property owner priced the fence today and said he could get, he should send me a picture and describe the fence if he could get 100 feet of it for what he thought around $600. I don't know what is an appropriate fence. I need to talk to the city engineer and or the city inspector as far as what's appropriate height and style to actually have it be, you know, like a snow fence obviously wouldn't be sufficient.
Right.
An adult would know better than to go over it, but a 12-year-old wouldn't.
Right.
So I don't know.
Okay. Cheers. Thank you.
And good to see you. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Add anything? Do you have anything?
Well, I talked to the
okay. Very good. We'll go on building zoning and sanitation, and we'll defer that today. And we have e-government. Lisa sent around her report. Got many compliments on it, Lisa. You covered very well about July 4th fireworks and all the activities. Do you want to say anything about it? Any questions about Lisa's report? Thank you. Are there any announcements? Hearing no announcement, is there any objection to adjourn? Hearing none, the meeting's adjourned by unanimous consent. Thanks everyone for attending. I appreciate it. Nice to see some people in the audience.
You're right.
Oh, we're just
going to say hi.